You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 1st, 2023. My name is Sam Seder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Raymond Jackson, president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 689, Loudoun County, Virginia. Bus drivers and workers on the bus system are on strike. Then Helena Bottomiler-Evich, founder of the publication Food Fix, on what's going on at the FDA and this recent finding that there's lead in a lot of baby food. All this and more. Oh, wait a second. No, that's not it. Also on the program today, Trump pleads the fifth 400 times in a fraud deposition.
It's because I'm smart.
I don't want to have to say it again.
It's because I'm smart.
Fifth, the sixth, the seventh, whichever one you want, I'll take it.
I'll do them all. College Board strips down its advanced placement African-American classes, caving to the assault by Florida's Ron DeSantis. Nikki Haley, first to announce she's going to challenge Donald Trump in the Republican primary. White House maintains no negotiations on the debt ceiling because basically Kevin McCarthy still can't figure out what they're going to ask for. New York Governor Kathy Hochul sides with corporate lobbyists and vetoes the Grieving Families Act. Cops who killed Tyree Nichols have records of excessive force. Surprise, surprise. Bernie Sanders calls on the DNC to ban super PAC money from primaries in the wake of the AIPAC GOP funding scandal. Lula to visit Biden in Washington next week. U.S. charges four in the assassination of Haitian President Moise.
Moise? Jovenel Moise, right?
Moise?
Yeah? Yeah.
That's what I thought I said. New report!
Said moist, basically.
I didn't say moist.
It's close enough.
Moise. New report. Black taxpayers three times as likely to be audited by the IRS. Talk about critical race theory. This is would be one of the first things you would teach, frankly. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot to get to today. You have to listen to the show using the app for behind-the-scenes extras like technical difficulties, somebody says on the IM. Folks, it is, what's that day?
Hump day.
That's right. Emma Vigeland coined that phrase almost 2 years ago now. And it is caught on like wildflower.
Like Sam's new phrase, catching on like wildflowers.
I'm trying to mix it up. I am in constant pursuit of my own catchphrase. Every Wednesday I get reminded about how
you'll never be me.
I've been doing this for 18 years and I have never had a catchphrase. And certainly to the extent that I have, you know, maybe pause it comes close, but that just seems to be something that like our fans say, but everywhere I go, people refer to my Wednesday as hump day. And you did that like almost like on day one.
Yeah, it's the power of positive thinking.
All right.
That's how you did it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Secret?
Let's get to this. Right now, Tony Blinken is in Israel. Meeting with Bibi Netanyahu. It remains to be seen what the I mean, I don't know that there is, frankly, a Biden administration policy on Israel. I mean, of course there is, but it seems to be do nothing. And
hope it works out.
Yeah. And, you know, give us a call sometime. Here is Palestinian journalist Saeed Arakat asking a State Department spokesperson what the designation the State Department gives Palestinians living in the West Bank and other settlements as the Israelis are gearing up for another assault, essentially, on Palestinian homes and trying to dispossess more Palestinians. Watch this exchange.
Status of the Palestinian people in the West Bank, including Jenin, including the camp of Jenin, and everywhere else in the West Bank. How do you designate them? What kind of designation you give the Palestinians in the West Bank?
That they reside in that those territories.
They reside in that totally independent of the rest of the world, as if it were a different planet? Are they occupied, for instance? Do you subscribe to the fact that they are under military occupation?
Saeed, let me...
It's a simple question. Are they under occupation?
Saeed, let me say a couple of things to the point that I believe...
Are they occupied or are they not occupied? What is the status that you give the Palestinians right at this moment? What kind of status do they have?
Saeed, the recent period has seen a sharp...
I'm not talking about the recent period. I am saying about legally. How do you designate the Palestinians in the West Bank? What is their status?
Saeed, I understand the question you're asking, and as we've said previously, it is vital for both sides to take action to prevent even greater loss, and we condemn any violence, escalation, or provocation. We have made quite clear, and I spoke to this in addressing Matt's question, that we believe Palestinians and Israelis equally deserve to live safely and securely.
Now, who guarantees that equality? Who will guarantee that Palestinians and Israelis can actually have the same equal measures as you keep repeating? You know, it's not the Palestinians that keep going day after day into Israeli villages and towns and so on and attack them during night raids, killing their people. You just basically recited the Israeli story that there are 9 militants killed and 1 civilian. As if you were sure of that fact, even before an investigation went on. Where should the Palestinians go for protection? I've asked this question many times in this room. How should the Palestinians be protected?
Saeed, we have been very clear, and we believe that there is an urgent need for all parties to de-escalate and to work together to improve the security situation in the West Bank.
Right, but
and just stating over and over again that you've been very clear does not make it so. Well, although they have been clear to a degree, we know who they side with.
I'll tell you what I am not clear about is, you know, why there is a refusal. And I don't know if this is a backtrack, but it feels like it is. There is no dispute, at least internationally, at least in terms of the UN.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how what other entity you use as an arbiter, but there is no dispute that these are occupied territories. They are occupied territories. And I don't even know what that's the point. Like, I don't know what the contrary theory is. And the idea that the United States would not have an official designation for people living under occupation, this just seems to me to be absurd. And they won't do it. Because they're, I guess, afraid of offending the sensibilities of the Israelis, or it's because the Israelis are, you know, maybe there's some push to annex that territory or whatnot. But the bottom line is they are occupied civilians. That's it.
I mean, I think if that latter point that you make, that if there's a push to annex that area, which it's like, I mean, they're essentially doing it slowly by removing Palestinians from their homes and seizing them. The fact that the United States is choosing not to recognize that as an annexation and as an occupation first would be catastrophic. That's what this journalist is pleading for them to do, to just take a stand and reiterate the facts on the ground as they are. But he's very carefully reading off a paper, probably trying not to mess up any talks with Blinken and Netanyahu in this new far-right government, but this is the exact time that the United States has to stand against it.
I also think that the problem is that it is hard to square the U.S. Involvement in Ukraine with their lack of involvement with the occupation of Palestinians. Because if you because the obvious parallel is that Ukrainians living in areas with Russian occupation are living in occupied are living with occupation. I mean,
occupation becomes salient.
That's the problem, is that they now have like some type of benchmark as to what they do in one instance with one category mm-hmm. of people, and they are afraid to have the Palestinians in the West Bank be recognized as being in that same category. Because then all of a sudden they have to account for why in this instance they do that, in that instance they do this. And that's what they're trying to avoid. But it's
so
also
far past that point, though. Everybody, I mean, people are really starting to understand what this actually is, that this is apartheid and occupation. I mean, they're the last to know, or they're the last to know, but they're being purposefully.
It's a rear guard action.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We've got a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be talking to Raymond Jackson. He's the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, representing about, we'll ask him, but approximately 140 bus workers, bus repairers were on strike in Loudoun County, striking against a private entity that it does not seem to have a terribly good record in the way that they treat their workers, based upon how many strikes we've seen across the country against this one particular private entity that's, I guess, running public transportation, which in and of itself is a problem in my mind. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Sponsor today. This is an easy one for me. I use it every single day. Here it is right now. Today, of course, still, I'm stuck on the Tangerine Immunity Liquid IV. It is the category-winning hydration brand. Liquid IV is not necessarily the Tangerine, but that's
it is
my household. But Liquid IV is the category winning hydration brand. It is helps with your hydration, your well being. The hydration multiplier they have is the one product you're missing in your daily routine. In just one stick, you get five essential vitamins: B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C. And you are hydrating two times faster than water alone. Because of its minerals and vitamins, just the uptake into your bloodstream is greater. Use Liquid IV first thing in the morning before workout, or when you feel run down, or after a long night out. I use it on long flights and also daily during the show. Liquid IV, you get three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. It's non-GMO. It's free from gluten. It's free from dairy. It's free from soy. Plus, Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. Company has donated over 25 million servings in 50-plus countries around the world. Like I say, my favorite right now, Tangerine. In the past, I've gone heavy into the matcha sort of energy booster.
Mm-hmm.
I recently got the apple.
I saw that over there, apple pie.
No, not apple pie. This is a different one. This is like the sour apple.
Ah.
That one of my favorite actual apples. I think it's the Envy. Is it the Envy? No. What's the name of that? I can't remember off the top of my head. But nevertheless, they have great flavors. Lemon lime, pina colada, tropical punch, watermelon, which is big around these parts, particularly in the summer. Acai.
Mm-hmm.
Berry, which I know is your favorite.
Yes.
Grab your Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the promo code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using the promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. Great way to keep yourself hydrated. Helps me during the winter, too, actually, surprising, because everything gets so dried out because of the heat. Mm. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Raymond Jackson, president of the Amalgamated Transit Union. Local 689. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report, here with Emma Viglin. Joining us now, Raymond Jackson, president of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 689 in Loudoun County. Raymond, thanks for joining us. I know you're pressed for time at the moment, but let us know. You guys have been on strike for 3 weeks. We're talking about 130 workers. Give us the background and the context of what's happening with this strike.
So we started negotiating with this company a while ago. Matter of fact, since the company came in, it's been a struggle just trying to deal with the company. One of the first things they did when they came in was not recognize the union. Then they made us go through the whole process of voting all over again for recognition, filing the paperwork. We did all of that. We got the recognition. The members said, yes, they want Local 689 to represent them. Once we got in, or once they got in, one of the first things they also did, you know, after making promises not only to the union and to the county about the workers, their wages and benefits, 6 weeks later, they cut them. They cut the workers' wages and the workers' benefits. Now, here's what's funny about that. And I ask the question all the time, whether you want to believe it or not, we're still operating in a pandemic. Since March of 2020, bus operators, train operators, station managers, because I pretty much represent the majority of the transit workers in this region. And we seem to forget about, like, the people who clean up the stations, the people who clean up the bus depots and things of that nature, all out in front of the public. We were the ones who made sure that your family members, if they caught COVID and needed a Metro Access van or a bus or a doctor or a nurse or anybody needing food or anything, we were the ones who took you where you needed to go. We didn't complain, you know, and if you ask our members, some of them would even say, I didn't sign up for this, but they stood up. And for you to cut out health benefits in the middle of a pandemic speaks a lot to your character as a company. But that's how we got to where we are. We've been negotiating with the company for over 6 months, and it pretty much was we were negotiating against ourselves. We'll put something on the table, they reject it. And if they did come back with something, and you all know in this country the inflation rate, I mean, for what they wanted to pay these people, these workers couldn't buy a dozen of eggs, you know. And I'll say what's most shameful about the whole thing is Loudoun County is supposedly the richest county in this country.
Yep. Yeah, that's my understanding is it's one of the like the median income there is if not the highest, one of the highest in the country. My understanding too is that you lost a lot of not necessarily in that specific local, but across your union, you lost a lot of members during COVID. And one of the things my understanding is too is that one of the big issues here is the amount of shifts that people are having to work. Can you speak to that issue?
So just speaking to like one of our drivers who he tells, you know, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around how he's doing it, but he may be working anywhere from 80 to 100 hours a week. You know, man, that's two jobs. That's two full-time jobs.
And so what is it? Well, I mean, what's going on with that? Like, one of the things that we've seen, particularly nurses striking, but we've seen this across the board, it seems to me, with workers who are deemed essential workers during a COVID, where there is an attempt by these companies that come in. And again, this is a private company that the county has essentially leased the right to operate these buses. And this company is Keolis. They come in and they attempt to basically limit the number of employees that they have as a way of cutting costs, essentially upping, you know, productivity from these people and basically driving them into the ground.
So companies like Keolis, they come in and they bid on contracts. Virginia has a law that says the most reasonable lowest bid, most reasonable responsible lowest bid. What does that mean? You know, so now they'll come in and they'll bid on these contracts. And now, you know, you at a car auction, you're bidding against each other to buy the car. Well, this worked totally different from that. Is who can put the work out at the lowest price?
Right.
And at some point, that price should have became unreasonable to the people sitting at the table, because just being able to put the work out. And what you wind up doing is what they're basically saying, and this is to all the workers in this country, when you're dealing with private contractors, the only place they can get the savings is off the back of the workers. So I'm going to bid as low as I can and then make my money back by working the workers harder, which is unsafe, making them work 50, 60, 70 hours a week, which is actually driving their productivity and their life standards down, you know, although you're getting a little overtime. But in order for you to make what would be a reasonable living, you have to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week just to get what should be a normal paycheck for 1 week. So they'll come in, they, you know, and I've been doing this for years. They cut corners, they cut safety. You know, anywhere that they can cut to get a profit, that's what these companies do.
My understanding, too, is that there was a strike in Reno, Nevada, against the same company over the same type of issues.
Yes.
That the another local in Prince William County, Virginia, has now voted overwhelmingly to go on strike if necessary again. This is another Keolis run, I guess, county, if you will.
Yes.
And the other thing I understand too is that Loudoun County is supposed to, the deal they have with Keolis is if Keolis cannot operate these bus lines, they need to pay a fine essentially to the county because they're not delivering on what they claim they can deliver. And part of what they claim they can deliver is workers at this rate and these this is the way you defined reasonable price, right? Is can you deliver what you say you can deliver without essentially destroying your workers? And if you can't, they got to pay. But the county's letting them off the hook for those fines. And it seems like basically they're putting their thumbs on this labor dispute.
So I'll say this, you know, as far as the county goes, and you're 100% correct, we had a conversation just last night about this. I'm trying to find the correct or politically correct way to say what I heard was a bunch of mumbo jumbo. It didn't make sense. I had my attorney sitting beside me. And yes, the county can and should be fining Keolis for not putting out this service. I mean, I can't tell you why people do what they're doing or don't do what they should be doing. I can say this, and you speak about the nurses and everything else that's going on across this country with essential workers, because when it came time, we stepped up. Essential workers across the board stepped up, from the grocery store workers to the pharmacy workers to even the person who cleaning the rooms at the hospital after someone died of COVID. Somebody had to go in there and clean up. You know, these are the people who we don't see. We see the firefighters, we see the police officers, you know, and now we see the doctors and the nurses. But what about the rest of us, like the transit workers? And now you have nurses across the country going on strike because we're fed up and we're tired. We are no longer willing to just put up with the treatment of somebody. I mean, I just saw a statistic that said America has more billionaires now since the beginning of this COVID, this pandemic, than they ever had. So what you're seeing is businesses are getting richer, and they're getting richer on the back of the working class people like myself and you all. And all we're saying is we're not trying to stop you from becoming rich. It's a democracy. That's what we do here in America. But we just want our fair share. You're no longer going to get it off of the workers' backs in this country anymore. And this is the message we are sending to Keolis. And then ask yourself this question. Just in this region alone, every Keolis property that they have, which is the one in Prince William that you mentioned, the one in Loudoun County, and you spoke about the one in Reno. It got to be a problem with the company. It can't be a problem with these different units, you know. It got to be a problem with this company and the way that they do business. And the way that they do business is about their profit margins.
I mean, it's also, frankly, an indictment of the idea of privatizing these things. Because you could either pay the workers who are actually doing the work, or you could have to slice off some for shareholders and for C-suite people and board of directors so they can all get their cut. And they're actually lending very little to the process here. Our audience, big fans of public transport, want to thank you for the work you've been doing. What can folks do if they live in Loudoun County to support you guys? What can they do if they live outside of Loudoun County?
Across the region, we're out on strike. We need help. You know, to be honest, if you can come out and just come out and get these people on this line, encouragement. One thing that they do when you go out on strike is you lose your health benefits. So we're starting a fundraising page for these workers so that the union can only do so much, you know, and we need other people in the region to step up. Some of the things you can do is call the politicians out in Loudoun County and ask them to make their contractor come back to the table and do what the contractor is supposed to do, and that's bargaining good faith. We've, I can speak all day about this. We've done any and everything we can. And like I say, we've pretty much been bargaining against ourselves at the table. So anybody that's listening or can hear us, I'm asking you all, reach out to the politicians in Loudoun County, have them hold their contractor 2 feet to the fire. And if you can come out, you know, donate some food, anything you can. The workers are out there every day, 3 o'clock in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon, rain, sleet, snow, hail. They're out there and they're marching, and I'm so proud of them.
Do you have a strike fund or any kind of link where people can go to? We can put it in the description.
I will send it to you all. We're actually putting it together now. We had some ATU members from New Jersey and New York come out Monday, and they donated, so we are actually putting that fund together now. To be honest, we didn't think that we would be out this long, January in the cold. We thought that this company would show some type of humanity. I don't know why we thought that, but we thought that they would. And it's funny that even some of the basic things that we're asking for, they give to the workers in France.
Yeah, this is a French company. That occurred to me, too, as I was reading into this. We know, you know, I mean, look, the bottom line is these companies are going to get away with what they can get away with. And if they can get away with something different here than they get away with in France, they're going to do it. And unless, you know, without you guys, you know, being able to fight this, they'll get away with what they can get away with. And so hopefully we'll folks out there will bring you some more support, and we wish you the best of luck. I know you got your press for time, so we'll let you go. But Raymond Jackson, maybe you can come back and give us an update in a while and see how you're doing.
I would love to, Simon. Let me, if I can, and I explained to you all before we came online, you know, also represent the WMATA workers. We had a member this morning who was shot. I need to get over there to the location so that I can find out what's going on with them. But I would plead to anyone, again, within the sound of my voice, reach out to your local politicians. The crime in this region is starting to be uncontrollable. Mm. You have workers who can't even come to work without being shot. That's a problem.
All right, Raymond, we really appreciate your time today. And you'll send us those links. We'll put them, we will post them.
I'll make sure you get them. And man, Sam, thanks for having me.
All right, thank you, Raymond.
All right.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Helena Bodamilla-Evich. She's the founder of the publication Food Fix. She's going to talk to us about the what's going on at the FDA and the recently announced plan to limit the amount of lead and other heavy metals in baby food. I know that is an infringement upon a lot of people's freedom, but hopefully we can do something about that. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. I want to welcome to the program Helena Bodamilla-Evich, founder of the publication Food Fix and a contributor to Politico. Helena, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with, there was a, we're just, I guess, a day or two away from, we just saw a sizable reorganization at the FDA. What? Tell us about that. I'm curious as to, like, how long has that need been building? What was the reorganization about?
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, a lot of consumers and eaters have not really been fully aware of sort of the problems facing the FDA when it comes to their regulation and oversight of food. But really, over the past year, we've seen a lot of scrutiny over the FDA's handling of food safety, of nutrition, the infant formula shortage crisis, you know, reports of illnesses and deaths among infants really brought this into the national media. And so the FDA has been under a lot of pressure to have better leadership, to have a better structure in place, we didn't know who was in charge of food. That there was a decentralized leadership structure there, which created power struggles and slowness in decision making. And so the reorganization FDA announced yesterday is really aiming to try to put someone clearly in charge of food at the agency and try to centralize some of the decision making. It's gotten mixed reviews. A lot of people don't think it went quite far enough, but it is a big change.
Two questions. One being, when you say in charge of food, like what else are they in charge of? Drugs, I imagine it would be the other. How long has this problem been going on in terms of like, was there a structural change, prior to this one that decentralized things? Like what is the predicate to the need for this?
Yeah, all great questions. I think FDA has been dysfunctional on the food side for a long time, for decades. But we did see the leadership structure change during the Trump administration. They eliminated a deputy commissioner position that helped sort of centralize decision making at FDA. So it's been a few years that we have not had a deputy commissioner. However, I think the problems are a lot deeper than just the organizational chart. There's cultural problems at FDA. There's a fear of taking on the food industry. There's a lot of bureaucracy to contend with. And so we see, really key safety and health issues take years, sometimes decades, to get out of that agency. And I think there's a broad recognition now that slowness on things like food safety, reducing sodium in the food supply, setting heavy metal limits for baby food, these are issues that consumers expect FDA to be handling. And so there's a lot of pressure on them to really do better. And I think that's what FDA is trying to do here. It's been a longstanding problem, but it has definitely gotten worse in recent years. And I think that's why you're seeing more attention to it right now.
When was the heyday of the FDA? I mean, was there a heyday of the FDA? I mean, because I believe, and I come with my priors that during a Republican administration, generically speaking, but I would imagine particularly one who announced very early on their agenda is to deconstruct the administrative state. I mean, that's a quote from Steve Bannon when he was still an advisor to Donald Trump, or an official advisor, that they do that when they come in. I mean, that's their agenda in the administrative state. The FDA would be one of those Food and Drug Administration. When was the heyday, and how much of these problems, and I do get the sense that there's been long time problems with the FDA and shortcomings, but we can go in one direction or the other in terms of attempting to fix those. When was the heyday, and how much of a setback was it during those 4 years?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. When was the heyday? I think, if you look back over a century of food regulation, we have come a long way in terms of getting like fraudulent products off the market and creating, basic standards. But we still see a lot of foodborne illnesses. We still see diet-related diseases be the number one, one of the leading causes of healthcare costs. So there's still really major problems that need to be addressed. I think it's a little bit simplistic to just look at what happened during the Trump administration and see that as too much of the real like source of the issue here. And I say that because actually during the Trump administration, the FDA was quite active on things like tobacco and food safety and nutrition in a way that I think people really didn't expect them to be. I mean, one of the weird unknown things on my beat is the FDA actually kept almost all of the Obama nutrition agenda at FDA. It's sort of this thing that surprises people, right? You wouldn't have expected that considering the, advice from the top was to deconstruct the administrative state, as you said. So FDA has been a little bit, I think, more sheltered from that. But there are just some really big challenges here. And I think consumers have this idea of what FDA does on food, and it just doesn't match up with what they're actually able to do or willing to do in terms of regulation and oversight. And to go back to your earlier question, FDA is also regulating drugs, medical devices, cosmetics. They actually regulate about a fifth of consumer spending. So they have a really big job. And food has historically just been a lower priority issue. I mean, they are focused on vaccines and drug approvals and all of these other parts of their job. And food has been just a lower priority for quite some time.
Is how much of this is also a funding issue?
There are definitely funding issues here. The other side of the agency is largely funded on user fees, which means that, you know, drug companies pay a lot of money to help fund the FDA and essentially assure that they will not have drug approvals that drag on for years and years and years, right? So they are investing in sort of certainty in a sane regulatory process. That's the deal that they've sort of made over time. On the food side, we don't have that. It's all appropriations, which means Congress has to cough up all of the money, and the food side has lagged in terms of staffing. Staffing's been pretty flat over the past few decades as their job has grown. And so that's certainly an issue here that a lot of people recognize on top of the cultural issues, the leadership issues, the bureaucracy, and sort of all of the other challenges facing that agency. And really anyone seriously looking at this will tell you that sort of all of those need to be addressed if we expect this agency to really be able to do its job.
All right, one more question on that notion, because I'm fascinated about how, you know, I feel like we in the public don't have a clear-eyed notion of the relationship between agencies and the administration and how that works. So how is it that there why in your estimation was the FDA that engaged in those areas that you would have anticipated they wouldn't be? I mean, how does that happen? Is it personnel? Is it culture? Like what shields them? Is it just that the Trump administration was like, you know, we got bigger fish to fry, and so we don't have the energy to really hurt the FDA in the way that we'd want to, and it's already so, you know, maybe there's already it's not an agency that's on the top of our list like EPA was in terms of allowing, you know, our buddies to be able to do whatever they want.
I think it's a little bit of all of those things. I mean, I don't think that former President Trump came in with like a clear vision for what he wanted to do on food and drug policy. So that sort of helps FDA, right? There isn't a clear agenda there. Part of it was also personnel and personality. You had FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb in that position for a part of that tenure, and Gottlieb had a strong record of taking on tobacco and, you know, even sometimes the drug industry, and was pushing forward still on nutrition. So if you just look at the record, it's sort of, I think it's one of those things that surprises people. But also FDA, you know, as you mentioned, was not in the spotlight like EPA and like some other parts of the government that were much more controversial and really getting a lot more press coverage. So it was kind of all of those things. FDA is also supposed to be somewhat more independent. So, you know, we're not supposed to be seeing the president like weighing in on, you know, drug approvals or things like that. Certainly politics are not kept out of the FDA, but that is the goal, is to try to keep it somewhat more insulated just because of the sensitivity of these, you know, decisions and obviously like, you know, life and death scenarios in a lot of cases.
How much of this is the fact that there's a bit of a symbiotic relationship with, I mean, we'll read pieces from the Revolving Door Project all the time and cite their reporting. I'd imagine that there's a lot of revolving door stuff happening, especially on the drug side with the FDA, that might, you know, preclude either party, either any kind of administration, for the most part, from weighing in on it and touching it. It's almost an organism onto itself. I'm not saying that right, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do think that's part of it. I mean, I think the hard thing about FDA is, you know, consumers expect it to be really strong and sort of look out for public interest. But there is also the mechanism that the industry needs, which is predictable approvals, right? A predictable timeline for these things. And so there is a symbiotic relationship there. And, you know, the agency doesn't always get it right. I don't think they would be I think they'd be the first to acknowledge that. I don't cover the drug side as much. There is much more of an issue with the revolving door on the drug side than there is on the food side. You tend to see officials sticking around longer on the food side, and it's just a fundamentally different relationship that the industry has with that. Also on the food side, we don't really have the approval dynamic. There's a lot of additives on the market that don't have to go through any sort of approval. And so the food industry doesn't really need FDA in the way that the drug industry does. And it's just a really different relationship. And it's actually this whole year of scrutiny on the FDA. I mean, I did a big story at Politico, if people are interested, called the FDA's Food Failure, that really maps out a lot of this. But there's been so much scrutiny that now the Washington Post editorial board is actually calling to just pull food out of the FDA, like just separate it out. It's just different, needs its own agency. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but I am seeing a lot more momentum and sort of legitimacy building around that concept. I don't know when we would see it, but there is a lot of people starting to think that maybe that's a better way to do it.
It does feel like a totally different dynamic, because somehow like the price sensitivity that the public has to food seems to be different than it is to pharmaceuticals. And so there's a, you know, and we don't know what drug that we're not getting access to, but if for some reason there was, you know, people aren't getting pork or eggs or, you know, cheese or, you know, cabbage or something, there, we hear about that much quicker, I would imagine. So the dynamics are very different. Let's move to this latest announcement by the FDA that the government is going to take away my freedom to have heavy metals in baby food. And again, meddling in this relationship that I have, it's just one more example, like light bulbs, where I'm not going to be able to get lead in my baby food. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, FDA has.
I should say, many years. You can pick up on that.
Those were really good puns. Yeah. FDA has been under pressure for several years from consumer groups to set standards for heavy metals like lead and cadmium, and arsenic, other toxic elements in baby food. So we have not had standards for baby food. We have had some limits for rice. Arsenic is a particular issue in rice, which is a problem when you're doing rice cereal for infants. And so other than rice, we really hadn't had standards, and the FDA just set forward voluntary but serious, the industry is expected to comply with these lead standards for different types of baby food. Consumer groups are really happy that they finally did this, although not everyone thinks that the standards are protective enough. They want to see them become stricter over time. So one of the problems with lead and other heavy metals is that they're environmental pollutants. So, you know, lead, we're paying for this burning of lead gasoline we did a long time ago, adding that to soil, adding that to the environment. And we're seeing it in, you know, root vegetables, things that take up a lot of elements from the soil. So it is not something that you can totally eliminate right now. Even if you wanted to make your own baby food or do anything, a lot of healthy foods contain small amounts of heavy metals. And in some cases, these snack foods are actually containing pretty concerning amounts of heavy metals. So there is a push now to try to set limits across all different types of baby food so that the industry is really focused on dialing these levels down closer to zero is FDA's plan. But again, going back to FDA dysfunction, the agency really had to be publicly shamed and publicly pressured into setting these standards. So it is not something they just woke up and were like, yeah, we should do this. Like, we looked at the data. They were publicly shamed by Congress, by consumer groups and others on the outside.
I'd like to see labels that give a lead, like, this is a high lead baby food, and see how well their product does. But we should, I mean, getting to this point, because, you know, I guess I got awareness through this during when the, and I don't think it was the FDA that did these tests on rice. I think it was a not-for-profit advocacy group, if I remember correctly, but I'm not 100% sure on that. And they found that actually brown rice tended to be planted in areas that would and more susceptible to more uptake of arsenic. And correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is you grow this stuff in areas where they have used arsenic, for instance, as a pesticide, and it has a very long half-life to the extent that it has any. It just lives in the soil. It gets uptake by certain vegetables, like root vegetables, like you say, like I know, like sunflowers do this quite a bit, actually, but and rice absorb this stuff into them. So when the FDA says, all right, here are the standards that we want to set, and we're drawing attention to your products more, and it's voluntary, but it's going to mean that there's more awareness of the lead in your, you know, given product or, you know, based upon what you're using. Does the company then have to make a decision, okay, we can no longer grow the rice that we're using in this baby food, for instance. I'm just using this as an example because I don't know the specifics. But we can't grow it in either this area of the U.S., but it's probably more than likely like we can't get it from China anymore, or we can't get it from this part, this other country where they had no regulations whatsoever as to what they could use for pesticides or insecticides or whatever, and their soil is just tainted, and we need to find a different place. That's going to cost us money. Is that basically the dynamic that we're looking at?
Yeah, it is that dynamic, but it is really forcing the industry to think, are there things we could be doing? Could we be sourcing sweet potatoes from a field one over that just had lower heavy metals in the soil? Are there things that growers could be doing to reduce this? This is a question for the Agricultural Research Service over at USDA. This is something that is solvable with many people focusing on it. You can't eliminate all, you know, exposure to heavy metals because of the environmental pollution. And some of them are naturally occurring, but you could reduce it a lot with some focus, with some real attention to sourcing and what kind of conditions these products are grown in. And so that's really what setting standards does, is it makes the industry go, ooh, if our product's tested and we're not meeting this FDA limit, like we could really be in hot water. And it really forces testing where maybe there was none or very little. Some companies do a lot of testing voluntarily, but there's no real requirement to do that.
And so, I mean, regulations make the products better. I mean, that's basically it.
I think we could all agree that paying attention to neurotoxins in baby food is worth doing, right? I mean, these are.
I'm not sure that we can, who the we is in that, because
all three of us can.
I mean, look. Yeah.
I've never heard a conservative say lead in baby food's not an issue. They may not be talking about it, but I think if you take this to most consumers, to most people across the political spectrum, I think there is agreement that lead, which has been proven to reduce IQs and increase behavioral problems and all sorts of neurodevelopment issues, I do think this is one of those issues where you would find really broad agreement. I will go out on a limb on that one. Yeah.
You may be right about that. I guess I'm just like, they seem to be okay, though, with burning of, let's say, a gas in an apartment where there's evidence that will...
Yeah. I mean, or setting up an FDA that or government structures where regulation so lax that these kinds of things might happen. I mean, in terms of priority, the average voter is going to say no lead in baby food. I understand that. But in practice, the Republicans, they want to dismantle the administrative state.
I mean, in some cases, the industry actually wants standards, right? Because they want safe harbor too, right? They want to be like, okay, well, if we can get below this level, are we good? Are we safe? Are we not going to get sued? Are we meeting, without any standards at all, it's kind of disorienting in the market.
Well, it's also a race to the bottom. Because if there's no standards, then you, all of your incentive structure is to provide the baby food with the most amount of lead, more or less, because you know it's going to be the cheapest place to grow. It's the least expensive in terms of what you're not going to have to exert any resources to inhibit that in your product. And it just creates a race to the bottom.
I think it disincentivizes the investment in testing because testing is expensive. So if you're spending all this money testing and you know your competitors aren't, that's also not a level playing field. And so I think there is kind of a level playing field, sort of conservative free market argument that could be made here where setting clear rules is probably helpful for the industry.
Right. I mean, but of course, setting rules is not a free market concept that they would accept. But putting that aside, are there other things that you see out there that have yet to reach the level of the concern in terms of or the response that we've seen in terms of lead? In other words, I imagine for some time there has been an awareness within your circles that lead and heavy metals and baby food has been a problem, and at one point it reaches the level where the FDA has to. What is the other things that you see on the horizon in terms of issues like that?
Yeah, I interviewed FDA Commissioner Robert Califf this week about the FDA reorganization that they're doing, and he brought up chemical safety and chemical issues as an important thing on the food side. And I think he raises a salient point, which is that we're seeing a lot more press coverage and research studies on things like PFOS or PFAS, the forever chemicals that are, you know, common in like nonstick applications. Those do not break down, and there's a lot of environmental contamination. There's concerns about these being found in various food products. And also, I think microplastics, you know, you're seeing more coverage of this, like little bits of plastic that are getting into food and particularly water. They recently are finding this in like placentas and breast milk. And, you know, we don't know the health effects of this. We don't have evidence that it is something that like we need to be, you know, imminently concerned about. But I think people hear that and they're like, you know, we should probably be looking at that.
Right.
So I think you will see more conversation around that. And I wouldn't be surprised in the next several years if FDA isn't looking at these issues more.
That's interesting. My understanding, having interviewed a lot about PFAS in the course of some like tort cases, that we could all take a sample of blood and there'd be some at least trace amounts of PFAS in all of us. Because like you say, this stuff doesn't degrade. It just travels through our environment. Helena Bottomilevich, thank you so much for your time today. We'll put a link to Food Fix and some of your work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I'm going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls and your IMs, and we will have fun. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only help this show survive and thrive, you get the free half free of commercials, you get the fun half. We will put links when we get it from Raymond Jackson, how you can help those Amalgamated Transit Union workers if you are so inclined. Again, you know, it helps when you're on the picket line and somebody comes by and honks in support of you. I mean, it's
always nice to hear that from the folks themselves, though, because you like worry like, are they? Am I going to be welcome?
Yeah, know, like, right. Am I imposing?
Yeah. Is it? But showing up with, especially with like pizzas and stuff like that, that's, you know, awesome. Worth
yep.
the time.
People appreciate it.
Also, I just want to underline another labor representative saying, "Take COVID seriously."
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just
I don't know about that. That's just crazy.
Boy, Fauci somebody's got bee in their bonnet.
I'm really. I did a whole thing on. We did an hour and 40 minute post game last night on Left Reckoning.
I feel like you're also your Twitter activity. You've been on like a 3 to 4 day kind of sprint with this.
Yeah, I want the smoke. Some people don't want the smoke.
Yeah, I hear it.
There you go. All right, loving it. This is like a new Matt.
I need a vacation.
But you're getting one, right?
You're getting one. Matt's,
my last day.
That's right. Matt's headed off to sunnier climes. We'll see if he comes back.
Disappearing to the jungle.
JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. And folks, you know, pass around the show. There's a lot of people out there who I think, you know, because YouTube has become such a dominant player in the way that people trade media around, There's a lot of people out there who don't even realize we do the first half of the program. It's true. It's like it's
Tim
starting
Pool
to
for
occur.
One.
Yeah, right.
Tim Pool for one, but I'm not so concerned about him. But there's a lot of people who should be hearing from the labor folks that we have on the program, hearing about the agencies. We try and do over the course of a week. Right now, we're in a zone where we're trying to do over the course of the week a range of different types of interviews that. You know, some of you like all of them, but others might be more inclined to hear more about history at certain points and how that implicates our current politics. Other people might be more interested in the labor stuff that we cover or the agency stuff that is a little bit more sort of material and immediate. So send stuff to your friends, particularly, you know, whether it's the YouTube first half of the program or the Twitch. You know, you clip our Twitch, you can actually clip it pretty easily, or the podcast. So helps the show and give us a review on any of those platforms. Well, here we go. Kirby 4242. I'm a water researcher at the University of British Columbia, and to give some hope about PFAS, we're making pretty big strides in dealing with it on an environmental level and medical level. Thanks to massive media coverage, unions were able to get PFAS out of firefighter coats, and fast food companies got pressured into using different materials in their packing. Media hype matters for science. Great. Emma.
Yes.
What's happening with ESPN?
Well, I mean...
The goat.
Yikes. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Who's he talking about?
Brady retired today again.
Oh, she knew who I was talking about.
Yeah,
oh, is the goat. Brady retired? Yeah. I mean, asterisk. Like, we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's for real this time. Good thing he blew up his marriage for this. But I don't know why. I just can't stop hating him. We talk about Brady hate and more on YouTube.com/ESPN show.
A lot of coaching news to get to tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And Sean Payton bombshell. So we're not doing the show today, even though there was a lot of breaking news late afternoon. Today, we'll do it tomorrow. Touch on Sean Payton. Touch on D'Amico Ryan's going to the Texans. Why that's an interesting situation. He got a 6-year deal, so hopefully that gives him some security because that ownership group sucks. And more, youtube.com/ESPN show.
And on the Matt Leck Media.
Yeah, like I said last night, talked about Jimmy Dore for a while in the post game. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning. In the first half, we talked to Matt Huber about climate change and class politics. And David, you never guess what the last state to have a COVID emergency active is.
Texas.
Maybe Emma would guess. I mean, never is probably too long.
Who is that
states.
Used?
You might have told me about
Who
it.
Who is that used against is really the question, right?
Yeah, well,
I mean, people can guess.
All that disease coming across the border.
Yeah. Yep.
So we talk about that. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning to get access to that.
646-257-3920 is the number. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Can we bring back DJ Denner?
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males
psych. Fuck them.
fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total, 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 total,